Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey everyone, happy Friday. It's Jen. I have some good news. I actually just recorded a new interview with Jess. So she's going to be coming back next week. If you've missed her voice, don't worry. She'll be back on Friday, March 15th with a special interview. I've missed her. She just jumped right back in. I was like, I'm sorry, let's just acknowledge we haven't heard your voice in a little bit. But we just finished recording that. And so that's next week. But this week, oh, in her absence, I am going to nerd out big time. We are going deep, deep into the science corner. I feel like you guys are ready to go there with me. I've gotten lots of questions about this particular topic and lots of response from people whenever I do a science corner that you really like it. So I'm hoping I don't lose you on the nerd factor of all of this, but we're going to talk about sunscreen, like really get into it. What's the deal with sunscreen regulations here in the United States? They're so messed up. Why don't we have all the good sunscreen ingredients they use abroad? Why is there still confusion about the safety of different sunscreen ingredients? All of that will be covered, and we have the perfect person to cover it with, Dr. Julian Sass. Julian has a PhD in biomathematics, which plays into this a little bit, as you'll hear. But he's also worked in research and development, product development, consumer education in the cosmetic world. Plus, he's a science educator and content creator, and the creator of a complete online database to his favorite sunscreen, which you can find at drjuliansass.com. Sass is S-A-S-S. This will all be linked in the show notes as well. He and I have some derm friends in common, and I know he's fun, and he makes science easy to understand. He also makes wonky, boring policy stuff more digestible, which I just love. So as we gear up for spring and more sunshine here in New York City, I thought it was the perfect time to talk sunscreen and welcome Julian Sass to the Fat Mascara Studio. Julian, hi. Welcome to Fat Mascara.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
People have been asking for an episode where we really dig into what's going on with sunscreen here in the United States. And I was like, okay, I've got to find someone who knows what they're talking about. And that is clearly you. You've like built a sunscreen database. Before we get into all of that, I mean, I just need to get to know the man behind the videos that I see on my feed. How would your friends describe you? What's your vibe?
Oh, how would my friends describe me? I think yeah. I am an enthusiastic beauty consumer. I think okay. that is something. I mean, I'm sitting in a hoard of product right now where we are recording. Is actually, so you're in my lab space right now. So I have product on one side. I have ingredients behind me. I have just a lot of stuff. But yeah, just enthusiastic beauty, but also very scientific. And I have a very like practical approach to a lot of things because my background is actually mathematics.
Wait, talk to me about this. Not only mathematics, you have a PhD in biomathematics.
Biomathematics.
What is that?
So the way that I sell it is we're solving biological problems with mathematical tools. So if there's something that we're trying to understand. So for me, what I was doing was looking at treating HIV in infants And when we can't actually do those kinds of treatments, then what we do instead is create mathematical models that simulate how these systems would work, how these treatments might interact with different things in the body. So setting all those things up requires a lot of biology knowledge, a lot of chemistry knowledge, a lot of math knowledge. So it's a lot of things that I'm really pulling from.
Wait, this is so helpful for cosmetic regulation, because a big argument, I'm like diving right in here, but is that why do we have to use animals? Why do we have to test on these people? Like, can't we just model it out? Is that kind of what you were doing in your research?
Exactly. Is building how those models might look. And I know that we'll get into it later, but we get a long way to go in general. And I think that when we start talking about animal testing, and I know that everyone has a very knee-jerk response to it, and you should, but there's definitely a lot more things that are happening.
Okay, well, this makes more sense to me, though, how your skills translate into what you do now, which is obviously more in the cosmetics industry, the beauty industry. You're an educator, you're a consultant, you help with... Like, how did you get into the cosmetic side of things from where you just explained you started with biomathematics?
Yeah, started out as a content creator, to be honest, because when I was in grad school, I was like in my early 20s dealing with acne and started just like learning about skincare. And it's like, okay, we were all looking at the YouTubers and the like dermatologists on Instagram and learning things from them. And so that kind of gave one side of it, but then I wanted to get more into the technical side of it. So started looking through different ingredient databases, learning about things and the evidence behind them. And so I started making content started out with the evidence behind ingredients and really understanding what the data says about different ingredients, both from ingredient suppliers and also from all the published literature. And then my content kind of exploded from that in ways that I didn't expect at all. Like, I did not intend to become a content creator at all. So going through grad school, being a content creator, and then my previous job found me from Instagram, snatched me up. And then I was still doing content, but also working in the industry on the brand side. And yeah, so that's how I kind of dived in. So once I finished my PhD, then I was like, all right, I'm full on beauty now.
So when you were working on the brand side of things, and I know you still consult on the brand side of things, I know you've worked with clinical testing. Do you think of yourself also as a cosmetic chemist? I know you're not a chemist by trade, but that has become part of your job.
Yeah, like it's a part of what I do now because, you know, at that previous job, I learned how to formulate. And so now as a part of my consulting things, like I'm formulating products as well. So that's a part of what I do. And yes, like I'm not a chemist by trade, but like in terms of how to put a product together and understanding that chemistry part of it, like it's very much a part of what I do. And it's been a long time of me doing it. So yes, not a chemist by trade, but in terms of like knowing the practical skill, definitely have that.
Well, because I called you in my head a cosmetic chemist. And then as I was researching more, I was like, oh, he does more than that. Because I know you could become a cosmetic chemist and be like, have studied art. I know you don't have to have a degree in chemistry, but I was just like, this man has multiple different kinds of scientific degrees.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Wow. But you decided somewhere along the line, I guess, you kind of became the sunscreen guy. How'd that happen?
That was out of pure frustration, to be totally honest.
Talk to me.
Because when I was getting started with skincare, and something that you will always see dermatologists talk about is, oh, you gotta wear sunscreen, you gotta wear sunscreen. I'm just like, okay, fine. So I'm going to like CVS, Walmart, trying things. I'm just like, oh my God, everything sucks. It's just, why is everything so bad? And so from there, it was like, okay, I'll talk about sunscreen and just talk about the things that I'm testing. And then that became my claim to fame in ways that I never expected. I did not plan for this literally at all. And it was just like, okay, let me start sharing this with my audience. They're talking about it, you know, what I like and what I don't like. And that's really been what I've been doing for a long time now. So, you know, I make more kinds of content now, but the sunscreen is what people have really come for, without question.
Julian, lots of people make content, derms too, people who know about skincare. Not everybody goes and builds a damn database of 500 plus sunscreens that is accessible on the internet to anyone for free. Like, why give us this gift? To what do we deserve the honor?
I've had many people tell me that I need to put it behind a paywall, but I'm just
please
like,
do. I mean, it's very helpful.
Yeah.
I'll put a link in the show notes so people know what I'm talking about. But yeah, you gifted the world with something.
Yeah, it really was, again, just an exercise in like, I'm so frustrated because when we're looking at kind of trying to find products that might work for your skin, you know, it really is hard. And what people have like kind of gone to, it's like either you have a YouTube channel where you kind of go into in-depth like each product individually, or you have a blog or something where all your reviews live and you can go there. But in terms of making something that's like searchable and like easy for someone to go, okay, if I want something that's like matte and has no fragrance and whatever, that tool didn't really exist. And so for me, I was like, okay, let me try and do it. So it actually started out originally as an Excel sheet that was like linked on my Instagram that someone could just like look through with like maybe 50 products at that. And now it's grown a lot. You can filter by all these different things. And it's just grown in ways that, again, I did not expect. And it was just, you know, taking my technical knowledge and also just my beauty enthusiasm, just trying to make something that I think that people would find useful, because I think that it's one of those things that's really hard to just like find something that works just from looking at the bottle.
Or even reading an ingredient list when you're not a chemist, and sunscreen, yeah, especially. So we're going to focus this chat on sunscreen. And I feel like some of our listeners might not know this, but let's just get a little basics out of the way, because I know this will come out. When we're talking about sunscreen ingredients, how I separate them is chemical and physical. Do you do the same when you're talking about sunscreen ingredients? And can you explain what those are?
In general, yeah, when I'm talking to most people, like, yeah, people say chemical sunscreen or like mineral or physical sunscreens. There is some nuance there. It's not that cut and dry, but in general, you have the chemical, in scare quotes, which are the like avobenzone, homosalate, oxalate, those kinds of things. And they're called chemical just because they have carbon in them. So the actual difference is organic versus inorganic. But when I say organic, people think I'm talking about food, and it's not that.
No, what's funny is the organic one is the chemical one. Whereas yes. The physical sunscreen is the inorganic, which always confused me.
Exactly.
Damn carbon, messing stuff up, little molecule
carbon
there.
Every time. Yeah, and so with most of those chemical scare quotes filters, a lot of them are, it'll be too hard for me to find them now, but all of those are like fairly oily liquids, and those work by completely absorbing the UV rays and converting it into a tiny bit of heat. So those are the like chemical sunscreens.
And that's how they're shielding your cells and protecting them. They do the absorption of the UV light for the skin.
Exactly. Because rather than that UV light hitting your skin, causing that DNA damage, it kind of stops it in its tracks and says, nope, I don't think so. And so that's how that protection is actually happening. Then you have the mineral or physical sunscreens, which are the zinc oxide and the titanium dioxide. And those also work mostly by absorption. And I think that people think that it forms this physical barrier that just blocks the UV ray. But that's actually not what's happening. It still takes the UV, converts it into heat, but it does reflect a tiny amount of UV. It's like 5 to 10%. And that reflection is what gives it that actual white cast, because it's reflecting light, and that's why it looks like that. But the actual way that the ingredient is working is still absorbing UV, converting it to heat. So the difference isn't that massive in terms of how they work.
Oh, I see. I'm out here thinking I have like an astronaut mirror suit on when I'm coated in physical sunscreen. Because yeah. I learned that they reflect light, but that is not, even though they do, and that's why we see them, that's not why they're working to protect ourselves.
And I think that a lot of people also think that chemical sunscreens have to like be put on the skin and activate before they're able to work. But all sunscreens, like as soon as you put them on your skin, they're working. And the reason why you have to like, they all say to like wait 15 minutes before you go outside,
yeah,
is because you have to like, they have to form an even film on the skin. So when you put it on, if you just like put a layer on, you're going to have like tiny little like holes or gaps where you missed. And so when you wait, then that film kind of settles out. It's like letting your makeup set. It's like, okay, everything kind of like setting and getting into even. Okay, now it looks even. Then you're getting that full protection once that film has formed. But as soon as you put sunscreen on, it's working. So chemical, mineral, they all, you have to like wait that, you're supposed to wait that time period before you go out. Side because of that. It's not that it has to activate or do anything like that.
Okay, so as the scientist who studies this, who's looked into it, I'm curious, on a winter day, because we're in the winter right now, do you put on sunscreen and how often do you apply sunscreen? And on a winter day, just going about your usual thing.
Winter day about my usual thing, I will apply in the morning because it's just such a part of my life now. Reapplying, not so much, just because it's very finicky And it's also just like, yeah, I'm very lazy with reapplying. I will normally use something that's water resistant, but still lightweight, so that it's like an extra insurance policy. So I know it's going to stick around for a while. But if I'm just like going around my normal thing, I normally won't reapply because I'm lazy. But I will preach that you should reapply.
Okay, but correct me if I'm wrong. As all these ingredients are absorbing this light, they're sort of degrading in the process. So logically, we know that 2 or 3 hours after we put it on, it's not as effective as when we first put it on, right?
Exactly. Yes.
I mean, me too. I will cop to it. I also, in the winter, I'm like, I put it on in the morning, and then it's like, if I think about it in the afternoon, I might put a little more, but hardly ever.
Yeah, exactly. And so sometimes it's like the sunscreen filters are becoming less effective over time, but also a lot of it is actually that film that was formed in the morning just breaking up as you go about your day, because even like around your mouth.
Oh, not even from the light, just from oil and things like that?
Yeah, just oil, like moving your face. Because I mean, if you think about it, like if you put on foundation and you don't set it with anything, and if it's like a really poor foundation, as you talk and stuff, you'll get some creases where you're like moving your mouth or like something on your neck or whatever as you're moving and stuff. Because as you're moving and doing things, it just that layer isn't as nice as it was. But if you're using something that's more long wearing or more water resistant, that might not feel as comfortable, you don't have as many of those issues. So that's why I normally would do something water resistant. But yes, in a perfect world, we'd all be reapplying every 2 hours, but that's just not practical for most people.
We glossed over this, but I'm sure everybody knows that we're doing that because A, we want to protect ourselves from DNA damage, but also protect from cancer, maybe some aging if we're not into looking naturally aged, all
exactly.
Those good things. I think everybody knows that at this point.
Yes.
But even lay people who aren't that into sunscreen and skincare know now, because it's been making news for the last couple of years, is that the U.S. doesn't have the greatest sunscreens.
Yeah, we're struggling a lot.
So I'm sure there's lots of reasons, but can you give us an explanation in your opinion of why the U.S. is so far behind other countries when it comes to our sunscreen innovation?
The reason is twofold. On the first part, it's just not been a priority, really, for, like, U.S.-based companies. The other thing, which is the bigger problem, is that we are one of the only regions that regulate sunscreens as drugs. Like, the regions that do that, U.S., Canada, and Australia. Everywhere else, pretty much, it's a cosmetic product. And so when you're trying to bring like a new sunscreen filter on the market, it is the exact same process as like trying to bring like a new aspirin into the market. It's that same 20-year long drug creation process, which takes lots of research, lots of time, and lots of money.
And for people who don't know, a cosmetic, if you are regulated as a cosmetic or you're just a cosmetic, there is no pre-market regulation in the U.S., right?
Yeah, in the U.S., I mean, the FDA is more of like a do no harm kind of thing, where it's like you can't put anything harmful on the market. Whereas places like the EU, you have to go in and they have like their own things for like safety. And it's like, okay, we've shown that it's safe, versus in the U.S. where it's like, you can't put anything harmful on the market. And if you do, then that's a huge problem. So it's just two different ways of regulating.
Right. And for people that are looking on the back of their product, you'll know because there'll be a drug facts box on a sunscreen, on acne products. I'm trying to think what else that you might use as a cosmetic has a drug claim. Oh, like a dandruff shampoo.
Exactly. Right? Dandruff shampoo, eczema products as well.
Okay,
yeah. Have those. But yeah, so those are going to be the like over-the-counter drugs that kind of like meld in with skincare.
So we really kind of, as the U.S., screwed ourselves by having our FDA decide that sunscreens were drugs.
Yeah, like at the time, it made sense. And still logically, it makes sense. But all the red tape around getting new drugs in the market has made it so that we are very behind with sunscreen compared to everywhere else in the world where the innovation is actually happening.
Talk to me numbers behind. Like, how many sunscreens in the U.S. can we use? Like, can a brand use? It's like
there's
12
probably,
or something?
Yeah, 12, but like more practically, like what's actually on the market, like 6.
Oh, because some of those are just janky old ones no one's using anyway.
Yeah, janky old ones. And so even now with all the like,
that's a scientific stuff, description.
Yeah, like even like all the, everyone being concerned about the coral reefs and, you know, like oxybenzones falling out of favor, octinoxates falling out of favor. So in terms of the things that brands use, it's really pretty much like 4 or 5 chemical filters, and then zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, and that's it. That's pretty much what we have.
And so if you were formulating and you were in, I don't know, Korea, how many sunscreen ingredients would they be working with?
Like 20 plus that you can work with. Again, there are things that are approved that aren't used nearly as much. But in general, there, 20 plus that you can work with when you're not in the U.S.
Have you ever gotten to try some of those sunscreens that aren't technically legal in the United States?
Oh, yeah.
How are they? What do you like?
It's a combination of...
The joy on your face. You're like,
I'm just like, oh, I'm so happy. Like, it's a combination of the filters being just better and just feel better on the skin. Again, if my lab was not such a mess, I'd like pull some out and put them on my hand. But just the textures themselves are so much nicer and just like not as oily, feel a lot just nicer on the skin. And then, especially looking at somewhere like Japan, Korea, where the sunscreen market and how people use it is an everyday thing, the people who are formulating products in Korea know that the Korean and Japanese consumer normally wants a more lightweight sunscreen because it's there, it's much more popular to use it every single day. So the formulas are using ingredients that aren't as heavy, and the formulators know that they have to be more lightweight. Meanwhile, when you're in Europe, the US, Australia, for the most part, people associate like a thick sunscreen with getting more protection. So the elegance isn't nearly as high up on the list of priorities for the formulators here. So it really is a combination of things as to why the textures of sunscreens are the way that they are. It's both the market and also the ingredients being better.
So, and by the market, it's like this cultural history because, like you were saying, we didn't for a long time use them every day. But here's what's funny to me. Since the pandemic, you see all the kids in Sephora that know to wear sunscreen. I talk to 20-year-olds who like have never not put sunscreen on because they don't want to age like quote unquote spoiled milk. So it's our culture is changing in that people are wanting these, correct?
Yeah, it's definitely changing.
Also, our skin tones here in America. Like, look at us. We have a huge range of skin tones.
Exactly.
You dark skin.
And yeah, I think that when we're in like our communities, it makes sense. But when you look at the general public, like most people don't wear it every day. And especially when a lot of those things are kind of driven by like these large companies, it's like until you have like a massive shift, those products take a long time to change. And it hasn't had nearly the impact as like the whole clean movement or like the whole natural thing. That has been like an explosion. And the industry has responded very rapidly to that. Whereas like sunscreen usage is just so not as important for so many companies. So it's just like, all right, we'll just do a mineral and be fine. So yeah, it's a hard thing to shift.
I call BS on that. That's like a chicken and egg. If y'all made us better sunscreens, we'd wear them more. They used to be very comedogenic feeling, even if they weren't. And like they would sting. And if you have rosacea or eczema or something like that, it would, and still that's how it is. So it's sort of like, if you make it, we will come.
Exactly. If you build it, they will come. But yeah, it's a hard nut to crack. And I don't love that.
Yeah. Okay. So on this, if you build it point, we've seen in the last year, this is trickling into the mainstream news with people like AOC talking about sunscreen. It's a public health, not crisis, it's a public health need that we have. And the FDA changing its tune on how it wants to treat sunscreen. So this is a little bit messy, but let's get into it. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but things started to change in 2019, right? Because the FDA proposed a new rule on how to regulate sunscreens. Is that when we started to see movement of them asking for more scientific evidence on the current sunscreens before they could approve new ones? Like, what's going on in the state of sunscreen?
Yeah, so what is happening right now with the CARES Act and the other thing that happened in 2018, all that stuff, basically what's happening now is that all the mineral sunscreens, so zinc oxide, titanium dioxide, have a GRAS status, which is generally recognized as safe and effective. Whereas the chemical filters, this is the avobenzone, homosalate, all of those things, it was discovered that they are absorbing into the skin more than we originally thought, but still not at significant or unhealthy levels. So we do not have any data that says using chemical sunscreen is harmful to your health. That data does not exist. So continue to wear your sunscreen. But when you get into kind of what these regulators think of as safety, there's a difference between not proven to be harmful and safe. And where we are right now is not proven to be harmful, but they need more data to get to safe. And that's where we're at. So they want to make sure it's like, hey, when these things get into the skin, we got to make sure that they're not actually harmful. And there's no reason to think that it is harmful, but they want the data to verify that. So it's more of like dotting your I's, crossing your T's than like, this is terrible. Everything's going to be terrible.
Yeah. Well, here's what's confusing to me, at least, and this could be because I'm so in the beauty industry, so this is how I see it, but it's like we all started to, with Stylevana and these different websites, get access to these sunscreens from other countries. We saw how great they were, and there has been like this consumer sort of push and request for like, we would love to have more innovative sunscreens approved here in the U.S. Instead of that happening, we literally went backwards, and it was like the FDA realized that. And they put it in like our recovery act from the pandemic that we need to overhaul. But before we even do that and make things better, let's reverse course back and now check on all these other things that we already have been using for 30 years. Am I wrong to see it that way?
Oh, no. Yeah, that's 100% accurate. That's 100% accurate.
It feels so ridiculous. Also, because we talk about cosmetics are a do no harm. So like they have been out in the marketplace. If they were doing harm, the FDA would have heard about it. There would have been legal cases. Right. Okay. So as the companies are trying to now prove that things that are pretty much safe according to science, though we don't have definitive proof, as you said. So as they're trying to do that, we're sort of on hold waiting for that evidence.
Yeah, that's pretty much where we're at.
Who provides this evidence? The sun care industry?
Yeah, so there's really like three different ways that this could go. So it's either going to be the big multinational corporations like L'Oreal, for example, would run all this test, do whatever. There's the actual manufacturers who create the sunscreen products.
The raw material. Okay.
Exactly. So the people who are supplying the raw materials. Or there are these consortiums of consumer interest to companies, basically, who would perform that testing. But that testing is expensive. And so it is something that they would do this testing and it doesn't benefit them at all. It's just for everybody else, essentially.
So if like a private company, let's just say it's L'Oreal, puts in the millions of dollars needed to say this sunscreen we've been using for 20 years that is clearly safe is actually definitively safe, they just did that and now all their competitors also get to use it too, even though they were the one that foot the bill. Is that what you're saying?
Yep, exactly.
Is this why companies are like, I'm not doing it?
Exactly. That's pretty much where we're at.
Why does it, right? And at this point, too, I'm also like, I understand this isn't how our government works, but why doesn't the FDA have labs and just do this?
Yeah. I mean, with the FDA, I mean, it is not their job to run these tests. It is their job to look at the evidence and then do that. Because, yeah, with any new drug, like they will guide you on what the process needs to be, but they're not going to do it for you.
They're not in the consumer business. Yeah, they're in the safety business. I get it. Kind of puts us in a weird place as American consumers because we're just stuck here waiting. And every time I see an update, it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, I had an old boss who used to say, let's just punt on that. Like, let's just kick it. Like, we'll figure it out later.
The FDA love to punt. Like, that is what they are known to do. There was an act that was put into place, the Modernization of Cosmetics Regulation Act. So MOCRA.
Yes, yes.
And so a part of that is like making a portal where brands can like put their products in there. All the ingredients are there. And we kept being told when the portal was going to be open. And so every brand in the world is just waiting for this portal to be open. And they kept on punching it back. And they kept on punching it back. It's like, oh, we got to do this. We got to do that. And so we're all just waiting for the portal to be open for like 6+ months. Just waiting for this to actually be opened because of this and because of that. And so, yeah, they are well known for doing a punt. And it's just like, all right, let's just keep kicking this back until we can actually get this done.
Yeah. And ultimately then our representatives in Senate and Congress could be the ones to sort of haul the FDA in front of them and be like, what's going on? But clearly they can't agree on anything.
Exactly. Yeah. That's
so we're just kind of,
We're just waiting.
In the meantime, I mean, I have to be honest, I order my sunscreen from a website that's clearly importing it from Korea, the one that I particularly like. And I actually was writing a story about this, and I talked to an FDA representative, and there was like a very guarded wording of, this is not legal. But I was like, are you saying, would anybody be prosecuted for importing, quote unquote, illegally, a sunscreen that isn't technically approved in the US? And like, they did not want to answer. Because what do you think? Like, it's not illegal when you buy these, right?
So, no. And I mean, okay, like, what's what it is? So, it is not illegal when you're doing a personal import. So, this is what the difference is. So, basically, if you go on to Cult Beauty or Salvana or Yes Style or whatever and buy a product for yourself and you buy it, you use it, that's fine. But if you are importing it to then sell in a shop, technically, that's illegal. But also, the people who are going to, like, go in and check that, that's just pretty much not going to happen in the U.S. Now, in Canada, which is where I am now, that is very different. So there is not, at least where I am, so I'm in Montreal, none of the K-beauty stores in Montreal sell sunscreen. Because Health Canada, which is like our version of the FDA, is much more hands-on. And they're like, oh no, you can't sell this. So you can order things online and buy things from Salvani, Yes Style, whatever. But those are going to like a physical store. You're not going to find like Korean sunscreen here. But there are so many Asian beauty stores in New York City, like where you can get the Beauty of Joseon and the Round Lab and whatever, no problem.
Biore is one I know people love.
Yeah. Exactly. And like, is it legal? Technically, no. But in terms of who's going to come in and like prosecute for that, no one from the FDA is really going to do that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Listen, there are so many skincare products on the market claiming to help reduce fine lines and wrinkles, and you know I will try most of them. But how do you know your products are actually working? Some research to back up the claims. That's why Jess and I are all about Ritual. They created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted a clinical study to take the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual's Hyacera is now a part of my skincare routine, and I got in the habit of taking it every day by putting the cute little purple jar right next to my sunscreen. It looks nice on my vanity, and let's be honest, I love that. But once I stuck with the habit, I really noticed a difference in my skin. I am not the only one. In a clinical study, taking Hyacera for 90 days led to a 3.6-time reduction in crow's feet wrinkles as compared to placebo. And it led to a 2.9 increase in skin smoothness. I also like that they're easy to swallow. The capsules sort of taste like vanilla. They're not all weird and fishy like some other supplements. Plus, Ritual is a certified B Corp, something we learned about on a recent episode. And all their supplements, including the Daily Protein and their Sleep Bio Series Melatonin supplement, are vegan, gluten-free, and made traceable. Do what Jess and I did. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/mascara. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/mascara for 25% off. Before we move on to some of these ingredients and talking about it in a practical matter, I did want to touch on one other thing I didn't touch on when we were talking about this proof that the FDA is trying to get to try and make some of these chemical sunscreens, GRASE, like 100%, we know for sure this will not harm you. Something our audience at Fat Mascara cares a lot about is animal testing.
Yes.
So does this very expensive testing that the private companies don't want to do, that the FDA won't do, that maybe a consortium will do, does it require animal testing?
From my knowledge, yes. I don't know exactly what they need to do in that, but yes. And so here's my take on that. People care about animal testing when it comes to cosmetics, because people think that we have a factory full of monkeys and we're putting mascara on them, which is very much not what animal testing is. But when it comes to any new drug that goes on the market, that product has been tested on animals for safety and toxicity, point blank, period.
At some point in its history.
Yeah, exactly. So it's normally when it's it's not like everything that goes in the market, you know, you're feeding it to a rat. But when you are starting out that drug approval process, a part of it is doing in vivo, so in real life things like safety and toxicity. So it's normally one rodent species and one non-rodent species. And that's just to go to the next phase. Because basically what you have to do is you have, okay, here's the mechanism of action. That's your first phase. Then you have your test on cells in a dish and also your animal studies to say, okay, here's how much we can safely use in theory on people. Once that gets done, then you start getting into the clinical trials to see, okay, how this is actually going to work. And that's like three phases of clinical studies, each getting larger and larger in size, ending out with thousands of people in a study for this. And this is what every drug has to go through. Once it's done, it's done. And that animal testing is over. But because we're still developing those non-animal substitutes for those tests, and I know that there was a law that was passed, I think last year or 2 years ago, that, oh, animal testing is no longer required for new drugs. But that is not the same thing as the FDA has to take the animal testing substitute, because they can still say, no, we need to have the animal testing for this.
So it's not that it's required, but there could be seven scientists on their little panel, and one of them's like, I'm not believing it. Good science can be gray.
Yeah.
And it's like, I really need the bunny test.
Exactly.
The rat test.
Exactly.
And you just don't know until you get to that point of the regulation process if that would need to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So that is really where we're at right now. But yeah, like all new drugs are tested on animals. And because sunscreen is that one kind of meld between cosmetics and drugs that a lot of people know about, that's what people tend to get really angry about. But no one's getting angry about Ozempic, like at some point in its history, being tested on animals.
Or for that matter, a dandruff shampoo, of what you're telling me, like because it has a drug facts box on the back.
Yeah.
That dandruff drug ingredient had to be tested on animals.
Exactly. So yeah, so all of those ingredients had to be tested on animals. Now, once that's done, it's done. And the companies who use it don't have to do it. And there's nothing that happens after that. But when that ingredient was being brought onto the market, yeah, those animal tests did happen.
Yeah. And your filler and your Botox and all your things. Julian, can we fix everything right now with the magic wand? If we did this, this could be crazy. I don't know. Just make it a cosmetic. Could the government just be like, you know what? Let's just call it a cosmetic. We kind of screwed up when we first decided that this was a drug. Is that a dumb idea?
I would love for that to happen, but I do not think it will, because of just how much that would unravel, basically. Is where we're at. Because if it did happen, it would be a 5, 10, 20 year phase out process. Because when you think about it.
And there would be consumer backlash, I'm sure, from
exactly.
Like certain groups that are worried about safety.
Exactly. Like the Skin Cancer Society, I'm sure, would be like, no, it's a drug for preventing skin cancer. And then even just thinking about really small things like labels. So if everything, all the sunscreens that are in the US in the market have a drug facts label. And then it's like, oh, it's not a drug anymore. Everything has to be repackaged now into something with a non-drug label.
Of course. I mean, I know it would take time, but it's technically how it is in certain Asian countries, though, right? Because they're cosmetics.
Exactly. Could they, in theory, do that? Yes. Do I think it'll happen? Probably not. But I personally would love that.
I know. As I, like, research this more and more, I'm like, well, you could fix this. But then it's also like, of course I care about consumer safety and... Like, I imagine we would hear from Korea and Japan if there were some of those more advanced sunscreen filter agents that were causing health issues.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, so even with the EU, which I think that a lot of brands, and as people call the EU, the pinnacle of cosmetic regulation is the EU. So many brands are like, we formulate to EU standards for this, that, and the other, which is, like, fine and whatever. even with the EU and their regulation for it being cosmetics, but there's still regulations as to how, like, as to the evidence that you have to have for ingredients to come on the market. So it's not like making it a cosmetic is just like, all right, now it's a free-for-all. But if we did do that in the US, we would need to put some things in place about, okay, how are we going to still regulate these sunscreen ingredients? Because if it just becomes like a do no harm thing, which is what we have now, then people will be like, okay, here's my avocado oil. It's now a sunscreen. Yay. It's SPF 50.
Which I've seen online.
We'd still need to have some kind of more robust regulation.
Right. You still need the SPF kind of regulation of like.
Exactly.
And the other thing is the number, like how protective of a sunscreen is it? And if you just erase regulation.
Exactly. You would still need those things. But yeah, I think that, you know, adopting more of an EU perspective on sunscreen would not be a bad thing, but I do think it would be a long time, but I wish they would just do that.
Yeah. Well, as part of your job, working with brands, formulating, studying all these things, you have looked into some of the ingredients, not just the ones in the United States, but abroad as well. Do any sunscreen ingredients give you pause personally from a health standpoint with the research you've seen?
No. Really, no. Like everything goes through so much testing and so much more than what people think happens. Like, I think that when you're on the consumer side, you're thinking that like, oh my God, they're putting asbestos in our sunscreen. And it's just like, okay, we've very much moved past that. And everything goes through so much safety and so much efficacy. And so all those things, and you can read like for a ton of ingredients that are in the EU, all those documents are publicly accessible where they show like, here's all the data that we have for these products. And you get these like scientific consortium opinions. Granted, they're tens and tens of pages of very boring technical research, but it's all there. And so there's nothing that's been on the market that I've been like, that doesn't seem right.
What about outside of sunscreen with other cosmetic ingredients? Anything give you pause?
Outside of that, not really, no. There are some things that I find more weird than anything else, and not so much with the ingredient themselves. It's the ingredient and how they're marketing the product. Like if I see like, oh, this is a sensitive skin moisturizer, but it's got a whole laundry list of essential oils, and I'm like, wait a minute, what?
Oh, okay. Not because essential oils are carcinogenic or endocrine disrupting, but just because you're like, they could be irritating.
Exactly. And so even with the carcinogens and the hormone disruptors and all of those things that people are so concerned about, and then when you actually dig into the data, it doesn't all match up. Because what a lot of people try and do is kind of cobble together studies to say, oh, here's why this is bad. Because you might have, oh, this thing caused this hormone to get disrupted. But then when you look into it, it's like, they fed 50 grams of it to a rat that's only but so big, and then this hormone was disrupted. And then they translate that into, oh, you shouldn't be putting this on your body because it does all this stuff. But feeding something to a rat and putting something in a small quantity on your skin are two extremely different things. It's like not wanting to go to, I've used this example in the past, I don't want to go to a fast food restaurant because they sell drinks there and drinks have water and people drown in water. So I can't go to a fast food restaurant.
I realize there's like a convoluted steps to get there, but I can understand there's some people, maybe they have an immunosuppressive disease, or maybe that even if in rats that got an overdose of that ingredient, that in a teeny tiny study that they did once, that even if there was a 1 in 1 million chance, then I don't want it. So, like, there are those people.
Exactly. And that makes sense. And so this is why I feel like when it comes to consumers reading research papers and even just the media interpreting research papers, it really comes down to, okay, how do you read this from, like, a scientific perspective? Because almost always at the end of that paper, it says more studies are needed to confirm this thing. Because what they did in that small study might have been a fluke. And if someone else goes and does it, it's like, oh, wait, this didn't happen to me. What happens there? So there's so much more work that needs to happen. But that knee-jerk response is completely understandable. But when you have people who are not as adept at reading scientific papers, looking at those things and pulling out the scariest part of all this stuff, it seems like all of our skincare is out to get us. It's going to disrupt our hormones. It's going to harm our babies and give us cancer, all of this stuff. And that's really how it has turned into.
You mentioned consumers and media. Can I throw in there, tell me if I'm wrong about this, politicians, because you just look at California. So here we have this new list that's going into effect, I don't know, what is it yet, next year? Is it this year? It's 2024. Of a certain number of ingredients in cosmetics, not drugs, sunscreen, but cosmetics that are now going to be banned in California. And maybe there's like these two random parabens on it because there's like one endocrine disrupting. Like who did all the research to decide these 26? It just feels very random, the 26 that it is. I might be wrong about the 26 number, but...
But yeah, like, there's a list of ingredients that's like, okay, now we're not going to do that. And also there's the whole Prop 65 and all of those things are going to have to deal with that.
Right.
Yeah, and all of those things. But again, like...
Well, who put together those lists? Politicians?
Yeah, it's politicians and consumer advocates who read one paper and lobbied the government. And they're just like, okay, let's just do it to shut these people up. And so they do it. It becomes a law and we're done. That's it.
And it feels like we made things safer for people. And maybe in some cases we did. I don't want to like demonize the way the process works. And I'm sure there's ingredients in there that, yeah, like probably we shouldn't have that in your, I don't know all of them, but there were a couple that I was just like, I've never seen the data on that one. That feels really random that that's in the list.
Yeah.
And I know these are all on the 1,200 ingredients that are banned in the EU list that everybody likes to. Why are you laughing?
No, because it really is like, but because I'm sure that you heard this from people who talk about the whole EU ban list, but so many things that are on there are not things that you'd ever put in cosmetics because it's like someone selling pie and saying, our pie has no nails, it has no metal shards, and it's like, thanks. I'm glad.
Yeah. And I don't want anybody listening to think, okay, Julian and Jen are on the chemical side of things and then versus the clean people. I feel like it gets very, I'm not at all. I like to dig into it. I like to recognize that there's nuance. And I feel like that's what you like to do in your work as well.
Yeah. I mean, the clean beauty movement wouldn't have happened without some kind of rationale. And I think it's because we have this innate appeal to natural things, just like as humans. I think that we have that. And then it has become people taking that and then kind of rolling with it and saying, oh, we did this small study and this is harmful. Oh, we did this small study and this is harmful to the oceans and whatever. But we're not at a level where we have a really big, robust body of data that says, okay, this is harmful to our health. And so we should stop using it. So much of the things that have happened from the like clean movement have just been like consumer advocacy and people not wanting to see things. But what we do not have are the big bodies of data that says, okay, this is harmful and we should not use it. But then when you think about the things that have very proven harmful effects, we know that red meat is a carcinogen. Smoking, like they're carcinogens.
You could look at like triclosan, the antibacterial, or like talc that's been contaminated. Isn't PABA one of the old sunscreens that's
now? PABA is one of the very old things. Yeah, and so those, it's like, okay, we learned more. This is bad. This is harmful. We need to cut that out. And so they did, 100%.
But some of the things right now are just, they haven't reached that level
exactly.
of proof.
Exactly. We haven't reached that
level. And this,
level
again, goes back to what the FDA wants, which is, well, they haven't reached that level of proof. Should we get that level of proof that it's good? And then we can move forward.
That's where we're at. So yeah, once we have that, and it's like, okay, we have the data, great, let's throw them all out. But until we get there, I mean, even the FDA
or we have the data, let's keep them all.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever it ends up being.
And like even the FDA has said, hey, still use your sunscreen. Please still do that while we're getting all of this data in.
Well, it's confusing. The messaging is very confusing for people. As we're coming to the end of talking about sunscreen here, what should I have asked you about that I didn't? Or is there anything that you still think people are really confused about?
Oh, God. I mean, I think that in general, when it comes to sunscreen, again, yes, all this testing going on, but the way that they work and their safety profiles are still very, very good. So use whatever you want. If you like mineral, I personally don't, but if you love mineral, keep using it. If you like chemical, continue to use it. It's all fine. Just wear something every day. And that is the message I want to always preach in general.
Can I ask what you wear? You've like now, I don't know if this is true, but is every sunscreen in your database, have you actually put it on your skin?
Oh yeah. If it's in the database, it's been on my face.
So then you might be... the person who has tried the most sunscreen. Like, beauty editors are up there, but I don't think I've ever counted. And so after trying all of these sunscreens, what do you like?
So I'm going to go to lots of different regions here. So from the U.S., very shocking one that I like. It's from Banana Boat. I think people are like, wait, Banana Boat? What? So it's called Light as Air by Banana Boat. It is probably the best U.S. sunscreen that I personally have tried. Like, it is incredible. Now, I know everyone loves Unseen Sunscreen because that has taken the world by storm.
From Supergoop, yeah.
Yeah, from Supergoop. If you like that kind of silicone-y finish, that's great. But in terms of something that, like, I could recommend to anybody, no matter what your price point is, it's like somewhere between like $9 and $15. You can get it at like CVS or Walmart.
And it doesn't have as much slip, is that what you're saying, as like a Supergoop Unseen?
Yeah, no, it doesn't have as much slip, but it still, it dries down to like a somewhat matte-ish finish. I think it's more natural because like it feels matte, but it still has a bit of a glow. But if you want that like more primer silicone kind of thing, then yeah, Supergoop Unseen is going to be your best friend. So that's a great one. There are two mineral sunscreens that I like because the cast is very minimal. The Fall is Come Complexion from Coats, so it's COTZ. They are incredible. It's so, so good. It's like $26. You can get it from Ulta.
And you have, wait, so you have, people can't see you. You have dark skin. Like this is passing the test for you. Okay. Because I know when you have darker skin, like the white cast is
the
like,
white cast is intense.
It's bad on me. Yeah, I can't. It's sometimes a purple. I call it purple cast. Like it's like a lavender.
It's 100% like lavender purple is like this. But the, is
okay, so this Coats one does not do that.
Yeah, the cast is extremely minimal. They did a great job with that formula. And also there is the City Skin Age Defense from Murad, which is expensive. Like it's it's like $70 for 50 mil. It's a lot, but again, it's a very, very nice formula. But then if you're going outside of the U.S.
Were those all, by the way, facial, quote-unquote, sunscreens?
The Banana Boat Light as Air is face and body.
Yeah. I mean, I know you could put it anywhere, right?
Yeah, but in terms of the size, like, okay, I'm going to hold this up for you. This is a decent-sized bottle of the Banana Boat. Like, this is 6 fluid ounces, so that's a decent size.
Well, I think that's a reason a lot of people don't reapply, because they buy beautiful, formulated facial sunscreen.
In these little tiny bottles.
I'm going to be out of this stuff in like a month and it cost me $40, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. So trying to find good, big sunscreens is hard because when you're making body products.
How's the NOAD? Is the NOAD on the database?
The what?
That's what I grew up on, the NOAD. Do you not know this product?
No, I don't.
Oh, it was like, it's the store label brand. Like, it doesn't have advertising, NO-AD. And it would come in these tubs. And my mom would buy, like, one tub and for 3 years. It was probably so expired. I mean, I don't really burn, but, like, it was, to use my word again, janky.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that the Walmart store brand, I think it's Equate Beauty. They have a massive sunscreen that I have here somewhere, but I'm not going to try and find it. That's, like, decent for the body. Like, on the face, it stings the eyes, but it's, like, a massive square bottle. Like, it's enormous, but that one is decent. So, yeah, that's from...
But we were talking more facial.
Yeah.
And those four that, like, these would also cut it for, like, our face and around our eyes and if we have skin issues. You were about to go abroad and I stopped you. I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
like, what else do you like that might not be readily available in the U.S.?
Yeah, some things like, you know, if you want to go on the like Stylevana, Yes Style. If you're feeling adventurous, Amazon. I don't love buying skincare on Amazon. But, you know, for some things, there are reputable retailers.
Yeah, because of the third-party sellers, sometimes you might not be getting exactly what you thought you were.
Exactly. An old favorite is the Biore Aqua Rich Watery Essence. It's such a nice formula. It is... so elegant. It's beautiful. Like, that has been, like, a staple among, like, the sunscreen junkies, for sure. The Biore Water Essence is great. One of my all-time favorites is from a brand that's not as popular. It's called Isanox. So it's Isaknox. It's the UV Pro Sun Fluid. It's in a yellow square bottle. And it is so nice. It is so elegant. It wears great under makeup. It's water resistant, doesn't sting the eyes, uses all the fancy filters. And it is a sunscreen that I probably use the most only because the finish is great, but also it's 100 mil. So it's great for travel. And because the bottle is so slim, when I'm traveling, I can just throw it in my bag and it's not a problem because the bottle is just used for travel. So those things just put it above the rest. So that one,
you think of everything. You're really looking out for
us. Yeah, like there's so many things that you have to think. Just trying to really make it as easy as possible. And then some other ones, there's a site called Care2Beauty, which sells lots of European sunscreens. And one of my favorite sunscreen lines in Europe is Eucerin. They have products for literally every kind of skin. If you've got like dry, natural, oily, all those things, they've got stuff like Eucerin. They have an oil control, which is more of like a matte finish if you're more oily. They have an age defense, which is much more like moisturizing and hydrating. Also, La Roche-Posay formulas in Europe are heads and shoulders above what they have in the US. It is like night and day.
Going back to, because they're using the ingredients
exactly
we here
the really nice filters, and also because L'Oreal also develops sunscreen filters.
Yeah, L'Oreal owns La Roche-Posay, for those who, yeah.
Yes, so L'Oreal owns La Roche-Posay, and they create sunscreen filters. So they have like three or four that they create and they use only in their products, and then eventually will be available to everybody else. Yeah, the European La Roche-Posay formulas are just so good.
Are there any other besides European? We talked about the Biore. Anything else you love? Or just skincare in general?
Yeah. Oh gosh. I would say that I formulate like 60 to 70% of what I use, just because I'm so finicky. And really, I think that once you know how to formulate, every product that you use becomes, here's what I would change, or I need to make something that's similar to this.
So if you see it in the store and you're like, I wish it was this, but it just would like not be quite as shiny and had a little more mattifying, and you could throw in some mattifier and make yourself a brand new moisturizer like tomorrow.
Yeah. And not tomorrow. It would take a little bit of time to like, you know, pull it apart, figure out, okay, what's actually happening in here. But yeah, I mean, for some things, like the way that lots of products are built is very similar. It's just figuring out, okay, what are the actual materials that they're using for all these different things? And it's sometimes easier than others. But what are some brands that I like?
Or what about hair? Do you have like a hair regimen or a fragrance regimen?
I have all of those things. So I have hair, I have fragrance. My hair is fairly simple. And I'm getting more into hair now because one is just more popular. Like I've got some K18 on its way here, so I can finally test out K18. I'm years behind. I don't think like my hair needs it, but I'm just like, let me just test it, see how it feels. But my hair routine is very simple. Like it's shampoo, conditioner, and like a styling cream. I love the one from Bread.
What styling cream?
The Bread styling cream. Oh, yeah, it's so great. I love the founder, Mava. She is a treat and a half. She's amazing. Love her.
Okay, before we let you go, we do have to do the Fat Mascara 5, which is our speed round. Are you ready? First question.
Okay.
What's the first beauty or grooming product you really loved or fell in love with?
It's super boring. Differin, because that was the first thing that was like, oh, I'm seeing results and fast. Like, that was my first retinoid. I was like, okay, I'm seeing results. I mean, granted, when I used it, I didn't know about how to buffer it and all that. So I was like sitting, I was tutoring athletes while my face was like peeling off in front of them.
You want to go in slow when you're starting with a new type of retinoid.
100%. Always,
but I'm glad it worked for you. Okay. What celebrity do you think you'd be best friends with?
Okay. This is a cheat because we already are friends, but Michelle Monaghan. Yeah. So
did you admire Michelle before you became friends?
Yes. And then we bonded over sunscreen. We hung out when I was in LA a couple months ago and we just hit it off immediately. But she's great. She's the sweetest person. And it's just like, oh my God, this is crazy that we're friends now. It's very wild.
This is a big flex. I asked you that and you were like, but we're already friends. But I love it. I love it. Okay. What's your favorite snack?
Probably, again, to bring, like, I love grapes. Like, I can just sit and eat a bowl of grapes all day, or Pop-Tarts, which is less boring. Like, I can go through a box of Pop-Tarts.
Which flavor, though, Pop-Tart? See if we'll really be friends.
Either s'mores or the frosted blueberry.
Oh, okay. Good. So we can be friends because you will take those boxes and I will get the strawberry and the brown sugar cinnamon and you can have the other two.
I do love the brown sugar cinnamon.
It has to be both frosted though. An unfrosted Pop-Tart is like...
Unfrosted Pop-Tart is sad.
Get out of here with that. Little naked Pop-Tart. Nobody wants that.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Two more. Who would play you in a movie someday if there was a movie of your life?
Probably, only because people say this all the time, Titus Burgess.
Oh, really? Okay. Have you gotten like, that's who you remind me of?
Which I just don't agree with at all. I think it's just because we're both like black and queer. I don't know, but.
I haven't seen your fashion sense. I feel like fashion would play into it a lot because he brings a look.
100%. Like I wear black almost every single day. I'm very much not serving looks ever. So.
Okay. All right. Great actor, though. So I think that he could handle the challenge of portraying you correctly. 100%. So I'll allow it. Last question. If you're stressed, how do you relax?
Oh, either I'll come in the lab and make something that smells or tastes amazing. I love just making like a nice, good tasting lip balm. I've got a whole bunch of flavors and fragrances all above me. So do that. Or I know some people are like really creeped out by like ASMR videos, but I love an ASMR video. Just like
get
in my bed, listen to that calm, soothing voice. I'm just like, oh, okay. I'm just going to just vibe out for a bit. It's great. I love it. Those I find very grating. The ones that are like very intentional, where they're like, we're like tapping on the microphone and like moving around to get it in different ears. It's like, okay, like relax. Like it's
you fun. Say that, and yet I accidentally hit on one of those, and then I just can't look away. So I don't know. I don't know if it relaxes me, but I hear you. There are some that are very relaxing. You know what doesn't relax me and Julian? The freaking sunscreen regulation process. I think you did such a beautiful job for us, like really simplifying and explaining. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on Fat Mascara.
Of course. Of course. This was great. And yeah, it's a complicated thing. There's lots of hard stuff going on. And when it comes to just like trying to be like, okay, what should I actually care about? As a consumer, that's like really what I try and do, because there's a lot of stuff happening and everyone's freaking out, but it's all good.
Yeah. Well, thank you for everything. Thank you. We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us, or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com. We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Razor One product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara. If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182. Thanks so much for listening.